This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Flame in the Mist by Renee Ahdia. Read for you by Nancy Wu. The Seven Tenets of Bushido, The Way of the Warrior. Gi, integrity. Yuki, courage. Jin, benevolence. Rei, respect. Makoto, honesty. Meiyo, honor. Chugi, loyalty. In this age of decadence that we live in, people's minds are twisted, and only words are loved, but not practical deeds. From Volume 1 of the Bansen Shukai, The Ancient Manual on the Shinobi no Mono, or the Art of the Ninja. The Beginning. In the beginning there were two suns and two moons. The boy's sight blurred before him, seeing past the truth, past the shame. He focused on the story his Uba had told him the night before. A story of good and evil, light and dark. A story where the triumphant sun rose high above its enemies. On instinct, his fingers reached for the calloused warmth of his Uba's hand. The nursemaid from Kisun had been with him since before he could remember, but now, like everything else, she was gone. Now there was no one left. Against his will, the boy's vision cleared, locking on the clear blue of the noon sky above. His fingers curled around the stiff linen of his shirt sleeves. "Don't look away. If they see you looking away, they will say you are weak." Once more his Uba's words echoed in his ears. He lowered his gaze. The courtyard before him was draped in fluttering white, surrounded on three sides by rice paper screens. Pennants flying the golden crest of the emperor danced in a passing breeze. To the left and right stood grim-faced onlookers, samurai dressed in the dark silks of their formal hakama. In the center of the courtyard was the boy's father, kneeling on a small tatami mat covered in bleached canvas. He, too, was draped in white, his features etched in stone. Before him sat a low table with a short blade. At his side stood the man who had once been his best friend. The boy sought his father's eyes. For a moment, he thought his father looked his way, but it could have been a trick of the wind. A trick of the perfumed smoke curling above the squat brass braziers. His father would not want to look into his son's eyes. The boy knew this. The shame was too great, and his father would die before passing the shame of tears along to his son. The drums began to pound out a slow beat, a dirge. In the distance beyond the gates, the boy caught the muffled sound of small children laughing and playing. They were soon silenced by a terse shout. Without hesitation, his father loosened the knot from around his waist and pushed open his white robe, exposing the skin of his stomach and chest. Then he tucked his sleeves beneath his knees to prevent himself from falling backward. For even a disgraced samurai should die well. The boy watched his father reach for the short tanto blade on the small table before him. He wanted to cry for him to stop. Cry for a moment more. A single look more. Just one. But the boy remained silent, his fingers turning bloodless in his fists. He swallowed. "Don't look away." His father took hold of the blade, wrapping his hands around the skein of white silk near its base. He plunged the sword into his stomach, cutting slowly to the left, then up to the right. His features remained passive. No hint of suffering could be detected, though the boy searched for it, felt it, despite his father's best efforts. "Never look away." Finally, when his father stretched his neck forward, the boy saw it. A small flicker. A grimace. In the same instant, the boy's heart shuddered in his chest, A hot burst of pain glimmered beneath it. The man who had been his father's best friend took two long strides, then swung a gleaming katana in a perfect arc toward his father's exposed neck. The thud of his father's head hitting the tatami mat silenced the drumbeats in a hollow start. Still, the boy did not look away. He watched the crimson spurt from his father's folded body, past the edge of the mat, and onto the gray stones beyond. The tang of the fresh blood caught in his nose, warm metal and sea salt. He waited until his father's body was carried in one direction, his head in another, to be displayed as a warning. No hint of treason would be tolerated, not even a whisper. All the while, no one came to the boy's side. No one dared to look him in the eye. The burden of shame took shape in the boy's chest, heavier than any weight he could ever bear. When the boy finally turned to leave the empty courtyard, his eyes fell upon the creaking door nearby. A nursemaid met his unflinching stare, one hand sliding off the latch, the other clenched around two toy swords. Her skin flushed pink for an instant. "Never look away." The nursemaid dropped her eyes in discomfort. The boy watched as she quickly ushered a boy and a girl through the wooden gate. They were a few years younger than he, and obviously from a wealthy family. Perhaps the children of one of the samurai in attendance today. The younger boy straightened the fine silk of his kimono collar and darted past his nursemaid, never once pausing to acknowledge the presence of a traitor's son. The girl, however, stopped. She looked straight at him, her pert features in constant motion. Rubbing her nose with the heel of one hand, she blinked, letting her eyes run the length of him before pausing on his face. He held her gaze.
"Mariko-sama!"
the nursemaid scolded. She whispered in the girl's ear, then tugged her away by the elbow. Still, the girl's eyes did not waver, even when she passed the pool of blood darkening the stones, even when her eyes narrowed in understanding. The boy was grateful he saw no sympathy in her expression. Instead, the girl continued studying him until her nursemaid urged her around the corner. His gaze returned to the sky, his chin in high disregard of his tears. In the beginning, there were two suns and two moons. One day, the victorious sun would rise and set fire to all his father's enemies. Illusions and Expectations. 10 years later. On the surface, everything seemed right. An elegant litter, a dutiful daughter, an honor bestowed. Then, as if to taunt her, Mariko's litter lurched, jouncing her shoulder into the norimono's side. Its raised mother-of-pearl inlays would undoubtedly leave a bruise. Mariko took a deep breath, stifling the urge to grumble in the shadows like an angry crone. The smell of the norimono's varnish filled her head, bringing to mind the dragon's beard candy she favored as a child. Her dark, sickly sweet coffin, bearing her to her final resting place. Mariko sank farther into the cushions. Nothing about the journey to the imperial city of Inako had gone well. Her convoy had left later than intended and stopped all too often. At least now, by the way the norimono listed forward, Mariko could tell they were traveling down an incline, which meant they'd moved past the hills around the valley, more than halfway to Inako. She leaned back, hoping her weight would help balance the burden. Just as she settled in, the litter halted suddenly. Mariko raised the silk screen covering the small window to her right. Dusk was starting to descend. The forest before them was shrouded in mist, its trees a jagged silhouette across a silver sky. As Mariko turned to address the nearby soldier, a young maidservant came stumbling into view.
"My lady,"
the girl gasped, righting herself against the norimono's side. You must be famished. I've been remiss. Please forgive me for neglecting to...
There's nothing to forgive, Chio-chan.
Mariko smiled kindly, but the girl's eyes remained wide with worry. It was not I who halted the convoy. Chio bowed low, the flowers of her makeshift hairpiece falling askew. When she stood once more, the maidservant passed along a neatly wrapped bundle of food to Mariko. Then Chio moved back to her post beside the litter, pausing only to return Mariko's warm smile.
"Why have we stopped?"
Mariko asked the nearby member of the Ashigaru. The foot soldier wiped the perspiration from his brow, then switched the long pole of his naginata to his other hand. Traces of sunlight glinted off its sharp blade.
The forest.
Mariko waited, certain that could not be the extent of his explanation. Beads of sweat gathered above the soldier's lips. He opened his mouth to speak, but the clatter of approaching hooves stole his attention.
Lady Hattori.
Nobutada, one of her father's confidants and his most trusted samurai, reined in his charger beside Mariko's norimono.
I apologize for the delay, but several of the soldiers have voiced concerns about traveling through Jukai Forest.
Mariko blinked twice, her features thoughtful. Is there a particular reason?
Now that the sun has set, they fear the yokai, and they worry.
Silly stories of monsters in the dark. She waved a dismissive hand. Nothing more.
Nobutada paused, doubtlessly taking note of her interruption. They also claim the Black Clan has been seen near here recently.
They claim? A dark eyebrow curved into Mariko's forehead. Or they've cited them in truth.
They are merely claims.
Nobutada lowered the chin guard beneath his horned helmet.
Though it would be unusual for the Black Clan to rob us, as they do not generally attack convoys containing women and children, especially those guarded by samurai.
Mariko lingered in consideration. I defer to your opinion, Nobutada-sama. Recalling the foot soldier from a moment ago, she attempted a smile. And please see that the Ashigaru have time to rest and take in water soon, as they appear overtired. Nobutada scowled at her last request.
If we are forced to go around Jukai Forest, it will add a full day to our journey.
Then it will add a full day to our journey. She was already beginning to lower her screen, the awkward smile still pasted across her face.
I'd rather not risk angering the Emperor.
Then it is an easy choice. We must lead so that others may follow, Nobutada-sama.
You taught me that, even as a young girl.
Mariko did not look away as she spoke, nor did she attempt to apologize for the sharpness of her retort. His scowl deepened. Mariko smothered a sigh. She knew she was being difficult, knew Nobutada wished for her to make a decision. At the very least, wished for her to offer an opinion. To make a useless play at control. A play Nobutada could then smugly subvert as her elder. As a man. Try as she might, Mariko could not help the resentment simmering beneath the surface. Control is an illusion. Expectations will not rule my days. Not anymore. Perhaps not easy, Mariko amended, her fingers toying with the edge of the screen. But it is simple. She softened her tone, a pitiful attempt to mollify him. One that was sure to chafe, as her contrary nature so often did. Her brother Kenshin frequently gave her grief about it, frequently told her to be less peculiar. To conform, at least in these small ways. Mariko dipped her head in a bow. In any case, I defer to your wise judgment, Nobutada-sama. A shadow fell across his features.
Very well, Lady Hattori. We shall proceed through Jukai Forest.
With that, he urged his charger back toward the head of the convoy. As expected, Mariko had irritated him. She'd offered no real opinion on anything since they'd left her family's home that morning, and Nobutada wanted her to play at directing him, to give him tasks befitting such a vaunted role. tasks befitting the samurai in charge of delivering a royal bride. Mariko supposed she should care she might be arriving at Heian Castle late. Late to meet the emperor. Late to meet his second son. Her future husband. But Mariko did not care. Ever since the afternoon her father had informed her that Emperor Minamoto Masaru had made an offer of marriage on behalf of his son Raiden, she'd truly not cared about much. Mariko was to be the wife of Prince Raiden, the son of the emperor's favorite consort, a political marriage that would elevate her father's standing amongst the ruling daimyo class. She should care that she was being exchanged like property in order to curry favor, but Mariko did not. Not anymore. As the norimono lurched forward again, Mariko reached above to adjust the slender tortoiseshell bar speared through her thick coils of hair. Tiny strips of silver and jade dangled from its ends, snarling with one another in a ceaseless war. After Mariko finished sorting them into place, her hand fell to the smaller jade bar below. Her mother's face took shape in her mind, the look of determined resignation she had worn as she slid the jade ornament into her only daughter's hair. A parting gift, but not a true source of comfort. Just like her father's final words. "Be a tribute to your family, Mariko-chan, as you were raised to be. Forswear your childish wishes. Be more than this." Mariko's lips pressed tight.
"It doesn't matter. I've already taken my revenge."
There was no reason for Mariko to dwell on these things anymore. Her life was on a clear path now. Never mind that it was not what she wanted. Never mind that there was so much left to see and learn and do. She'd been raised for a purpose. A foolish one at that. To be the wife of an important man when she could easily have been something else. Something more. But it did not matter. She was not a boy. And, despite being barely 17, Hattori Mariko knew her place in life. She would marry Minamoto Raiden. Her parents would have the prestige of a daughter in Heian Castle. And Mariko would be the only one to know the stain on that honor. As dusk fell and the convoy made its way deeper into the forest, the scent of warm, wet air took on a life of its own. It mixed with the iron of the earth and the green of newly trod leaves. A strange, heady perfume. Sharp and fresh, yet soft and sinister all at once. Mariko shuddered, a chill taking root in her bones. The horses around the norimono wickered as if in response to an unseen threat. Seeking a distraction, Mariko reached for the small parcel of food Chiyo had given her, staving off the chill by burrowing into her cushions. "Perhaps we should have gone around Jukai Forest." She quickly dismissed these doubts, then turned her attention to the parcel in her hands. Within it were two rice balls covered in black sesame seeds, along with pickled sour plums wrapped in lotus leaves. After unfolding her meal, Mariko shifted her fingers to light the tiny folded paper lantern swaying above. It had been one of her earliest inventions, small enough to hide in a kimono sleeve. A special slow-burning wick suspended by the thinnest of wires. The wick was fashioned from cotton braided with river reeds dipped in wax. It kept its shape, despite its size, all while burning a steady light. Mariko had made it as a child. In the heavy dark of night, this tiny invention had been her savior. She'd placed it beside her blankets, where it cast a warm, cheery glow by which she'd penned her newest ideas. Smiling in remembrance, Mariko began to eat. A few black sesame seeds fell onto the painted silk of her kimono. She brushed them aside. The fabric felt like water at her fingertips. The color of sweetened cream, its hem bled through with darkest indigo. Pale pink cherry blossoms crowded the long sleeves, unfurling into branches near Mariko's feet. A priceless kimono, made of rare Tatsumura silk. One of the many gifts sent to her by the emperor's son, It was beautiful. More beautiful than anything Mariko had ever owned in her life. Perhaps a girl who prized such things would be pleased. When more sesame seeds fell onto the silk, Mariko didn't bother brushing them away. She finished eating in silence, watching the tiny lantern sway to and fro. The gathering of shadows shifted outside, growing closer and tighter. Mariko's convoy was now deep beneath a canopy of trees, deep beneath their cloak of sighing branches and whispering leaves. Strange that she heard no signs of life outside, not the call of a raven, nor the cry of an owl, nor the chirr of an insect. Then the norimono halted again, all too abruptly. The horses began to pant, began to stamp their hooves in the leafy earth. Mariko heard a shout, her litter teetered, overcorrected, only to strike the ground with a vicious thud. Her head smacked against varnished wood, throwing stars across her vision. And Mariko was swallowed into a void. The Night Beast. Mariko woke to the smell of smoke, to a dull roar in her ears, to shooting pain in her arm. She was still in her litter, but it had toppled to one side, its contents smashed into a corner. The body of a familiar maidservant lay across her. Chiyo, who had loved to eat iced persimmons and arrange moonflowers in her hair. Chiyo, whose eyes had always been so open and wide and honest. The same eyes that were now frozen in death's final mask. Mariko's throat burned, her sight blurred with tears. The sounds of movement outside brought her back into focus. Her right hand pressed into a tender lump on the side of her head. She gasped into full awareness, the sound a strangled sob. Her arm pulsed sharply, even with the smallest of movements. Mariko shook her head clear and looked around. From the way Chiyo was positioned across her, and from the way Mariko's lacquered Zori sandals had fallen from the maidservant's hands, it was clear the girl had tried to free Mariko from the wrecked litter. Tried to free her, and died in the attempt. Blood was everywhere. Splashed across the shining inlays, spilling from the nasty gash in Mariko's head, pooling from the fatal wound in Chiyo's heart. An arrow had pierced clean through the small girl's breastbone, its tip dug into the skin of Mariko's forearm, a trickle of crimson in its wake. Several arrowheads were embedded in the wood of the norimono. Several more were fixed at odd angles around Chiyo's body. Arrows that could not have been meant to kill a kind maidservant, and had it not been for this kind maidservant, these arrows would undoubtedly have struck Mariko. Mariko's eyes brimmed with more tears as she clutched Chiyo tight. "Thank you, Chiyo-chan. Sumimasen." Blinking away her tears, Mariko tried to shift her head, tried to seek her bearings. The ache near her temple throbbed, keeping time with the rapid beat of her heart. Just as Mariko began to move, a rumble of male voices drew near. She peeked through a break in the mangled screen above. All she could discern were two men dressed in black from head to toe. Their weapons shone bright in the light of nearby torches, their blades oiled a sinister red. "It can't be." But the evidence was irrefutable. The Black Clan had overrun her convoy. Mariko held her breath, wincing into the corner as they moved closer to the litter. "She's dead, then?" the tallest one said in gruff fashion. The masked man to the right considered the overturned litter, his head cocked to one side. "Either that or she passed out from the..." A howl in the distance swallowed the last of their conversation. The men eyed each other, knowingly.
"Check once more," the first man said. "I'd rather not be forced to report we failed in our mission."
The second man gave a curt nod and moved toward the litter, his torch held high. Panic took hold of Mariko. She clenched her rattling teeth still. Two things had become clear as these masked men spoke. The Black Clan obviously wanted Mariko dead, and someone had tasked them with killing her.
Mariko changed position ever so slightly, as though it might conceal her from their prying gazes.
As though it might shrink her into nothingness.
Chiyo's head slumped forward, thwacking against the battered wood of the norimono. Mariko bit back an oath, cursing her thoughtlessness. She inhaled through her nose, willing her heart to cease its incessant pounding. Why did it suddenly smell so strongly of smoke? Mariko's eyes darted around in alarm. The edges of Chiyo's blood-stained robe were blackening, brushing against the crumbled wick of Mariko's tiny lantern. Catching flame! It took all her restraint to remain quiet and still. Terror pressed in on her from all sides, pressed her to make a final decision. If Mariko lingered, she would be burned alive. If she moved from her hiding place, the masked men outside would undoubtedly finish their dark task. Flames licked the hem of the maidservant's robe, grasping for Mariko's kimono like the tentacles of an octopus. Her panic rising, Mariko shifted once more, stifling a cough in her shoulder. It was time to make a decision. How am I to die today? By fire or by the sword? The advancing man halted, a hair's breadth away.
The litter is on fire. Then let it burn.
The taller man did not flinch, nor did he look their way.
We should leave.
The man just outside glanced over his shoulder. Before the scent of blood and singed flesh draws the night beasts. He was near enough to touch. Near enough to strike, had Mariko the courage. The taller man nodded.
We shall leave soon enough, but not before you check to make sure the girl is dead.
The mournful baying grew louder, closer, hemming them in. When the man nearby reached for the mangled screens, one of the norimono's damaged poles split in two. The broken wood struck his arm, sending a flurry of sparks every which way. Leaping back, he cursed under his breath.
The girl is as good as dead.
The man spoke more forcefully, his torch whipping about in the wind. Heat from the mounting fire sent sweat down Mariko's neck in steady trickles. The growing blaze near her feet crackled as it seared Chiyo's skin. Mariko's stomach lurched at the smell. Sweat poured onto her stiff white collar.
Make a decision, Hattori Mariko. How do you wish to die?
Her teeth chattered. With a forceful swallow, Mariko dug her fingernails into her palms, her eyes flitting about the small, shattered space. Bravery did not come to her naturally. She spent too much time weighing her options to be brave. Too much time calculating the many paths before her. But Mariko knew it was time to do more. Time to be more. She would not die a coward. Mariko was the daughter of a samurai, the sister of the Dragon of Kai. But more than that, she still held power over her decisions. For at least this one last day. She would face her enemy and die with honor. Her sight blurring from the thickening smoke, Mariko pushed Chiyo aside, her hands trembling despite her best efforts. A shout rang out in the darkness. The man near the norimono twisted around at its cracking toll. The cries were followed by the snarl of an animal, the growl of several more. Another shriek, the echo of a death knell. With it came the cries of feasting animals.
The night beasts!
The man with the torch pivoted again, his flame leaping with his motions.
They're attacking our flank!
Check the girl!
The first man insisted. The girl is more important, then.
The prince's bride is as good as dead.
With that, he threw his torch on top of Mariko's norimono, whirling away as he sealed her fate.
Collect our fallen. Leave nothing behind,
he yelled to men she could not see. Mariko bit back a scream as clanking metal and rustling bodies converged in the nearby shadows. Chaos grew with each passing moment. The flames in the norimono leapt higher, faster. Their heat turned her skin pink. She clasped her fingers tight, smothering her coughs as she shrank farther into the corner. Tears streamed down her face, leeching her of all resolve.
Coward!
The torch above crackled to fire against the varnished wood of the norimono. It wouldn't be long before Mariko would burn along with it. The lacquered tinder around her popped and fizzed, the melted resin burning into blue flame. A shuddering breath flew past her lips.
I am not a coward. I am greater than this.
Her tears stained the front of her kimono silk. She refused to die like an animal locked in a cage, like a girl with nothing save her name. Better to die by the sword. Better to die at the mercy of the night beasts. To die in the night air. Free. Her pulse trilling in her fingertips, Mariko shoved Chiyo's body away in final decision. She kicked open the Norimono's door. One glossy sandal fell as she struggled to heave herself through, gulping air to quench the burn in her throat. Mariko reeled from the ruins, her eyes wild as she glanced about, frantic. The forest was full dark, and her kimono was on fire. Her mind worked quickly, instinctively. Mariko wrapped the silken material around itself, robbing the fire of the air it needed to burn. Her wrists seared beneath the kimono's folds, smoke curling from the watered silk in gray wisps. With a rasping cry, Mariko tore at her obi, cursing the way it had been wound about her waist. So intricate, so unnecessary. Stumbling through the underbrush, she ripped the beautiful kimono from her shoulders, lurching away from the burning norimono like a drunken fool. Her eyes sought the darkness for any beacon of light. All she could see was her litter, engulfed in flames. Her kimono smoldered against the forest floor.
If the men return, they will see the kimono. They will know I escaped.
Without hesitating, Mariko took hold of the hem and hurled the silk back at the pile of hissing flames. It flared as it touched the melting varnish, burning silk and scorching lacquer, melting dragon's beard candy, mingled with the scent of searing flesh.
Chiyo.
She blinked hard, struggling to remain steady. All around her were the bodies of her father's convoy, maidservants, samurai, foot soldiers, slaughtered as one. Mariko stood swathed in shadow, her chest heaving as her eyes flew across the damp earth. Anything of value had been taken, swiftly, efficiently. Trunks had been emptied, imperial chargers had been yoked as chattel, leaving nothing but their tasseled reins behind. Ribbons of red and white and gold littered the ground. But Mariko knew robbery had not been the primary objective.
"The Black Clan tried to murder me. Even though they knew I was to marry Prince Raiden, they still carried out their task.
Someone with sway over the Black Clan wishes me dead." Cold shock descended upon her in a sudden rush. Her shoulders began to wilt. Again, as if on instinct, Mariko set them straight, her chin braced against the threat of further tears. She refused to succumb to shock, just as she refused to grant refuge to her fears.
"Think, Hattori Mariko. Keep moving."
She staggered forward, intent on fleeing without a glance back. Two halting steps were all she managed before she thought better of it. Thought better about the odds of proceeding through a darkened wood, unarmed, and dressed in nothing but her underclothes. Shielding herself from the worst of the carnage, Mariko moved toward a fallen samurai. His katana was missing, but his shorter wakizashi was still in its scabbard, bound to his waist. She took the small, wieldier weapon in hand. Pausing only to kick soil across her tracks, she moved through the forest, without direction, without purpose, without anything, save the need to survive. The darkness around her was oppressive. She stumbled on roots, unable to see. After a time, the lack of one sense heightened all the others. The snap of a twig or the scuttle of an insect rang through the air with the resonance of a gong. When the bushes nearby rustled, steel grinding against stone, Mariko pressed into the bark of a tree, terror finally taking the last of the warmth from her blood. A low growl crawled from the earth, cutting through her like the thunder of an approaching army. It was followed by heavy paws padding over dead leaves. A savage sort of stealth. A night beast stalking the last of its prey. Mariko's stomach clenched, and her fingers shook as she prepared to meet her end.
"No, I will not cower in a corner. Never again."
She scrambled away from the tree, her ankle catching on a scree of rocks.
Each movement jolted through her as she landed on the forest floor, only to claw back to her feet. Her body felt alive, energy rolling beneath her skin in waves, all while her blood coursed through her body. There was nowhere to hide. The white silk of her underrobe did nothing to shield her from the forest's most sinister monsters. The growling behind her had become a steady grumble. Undeterred, moving ever closer. When Mariko spun around to face her attacker, two saurian yellow eyes materialized in the darkness, like those of a giant snake. The creature that formed around these eyes was immense, its features resembling a jaguar, its body as massive as a bear. Without further provocation, the beast rose on its hind legs, saliva dripping from its bared fangs. It threw back its head and howled, the sound ricocheting into the night. Her knees turned to water as Mariko fought to brace herself, but the creature did not attack. It looked to one side, then back at her. Its yellow eyes glowed bright. It canted its head as though glancing past her shoulder.
"Run!" a voice within Mariko cried out. "Run, you silly little fool!"
She inhaled, taking a slow step back. Still the beast did not attack. It glanced again to the same side, then back at her, its growl rising in pitch and ferocity, as though it was warning her. Then, without another sound, the beast glided toward her, like a ghost, like a demon of the forest, flying on a whirl of black smoke. Mariko's scream tore through the night sky. The creature disappeared in a whoosh of air, in a swirl of inky darkness.
"Well," a gruff voice resonated from behind her, "fortune has indeed smiled upon me tonight."
Not a girl. A dirty man materialized from the shadows. He stalked toward her, twigs snapping at his bare feet.
"What are you doing here, girl?"
His lips glittered with saliva.
"Don't you know this part of the forest is dangerous?"
Beady black eyes raked over her trembling form. No man had ever dared to look at her like this before, with such unchecked evil alighting his gaze. Mariko paused to think before answering, to devise the safest tack. She could not admonish him as her mother would have done. This was not one of her father's vassals or servants. Indeed, after what she'd just witnessed, there was no way for her to know if the man was of flesh and bone at all. Enough of this nonsense. Fear would not drive her to discern shape from smoke and shadows. Mariko stood tall, angling the wakizashi against her underrobe, out of sight. Instead of adopting her mother's imperious tone, she spoke calmly, softly. "In truth, I'd rather not be here, which is why I'm trying to find my way out." She met his eyes with a silent challenge.
"Dressed like that?"
He leered at her, his smile a jumble of grime and missing teeth. She said nothing, though every bone in her body stretched thin. The man oozed closer.
"I take it you're lost, then."
His tongue leapt out of his mouth, a lizard questing for purchase. Mariko swallowed the urge to reply, the urge to take him to task. Kenshin would have led him away in chains, with nothing more than a nod to the men at his back, the men bearing the crest of the Hattori clan. But Kenshin had the might of a soldier, the will of a samurai. And it was unwise for Mariko to provoke an unknown. So then, what should she say? If threats were not a weapon in her arsenal, then perhaps cunning would serve her instead. Mariko stayed silent. Though her free hand shook, the palm wrapped around the wakizashi remained steadfast.
"You're lost," the man paced nearer,
near enough for Mariko to smell the scent of unwashed skin and sour rice wine, the copper of recently spilled blood.
"How did you manage to get lost, lovely creature?"
Her breath caught. The grip around the short sword tightened. "I imagine if one knew the answer to that question, one would no longer be considered lost," she said in an even tone. The man chortled, suffusing the air with his acrid breath.
Smart girl, so very careful, but not careful enough. If you were truly careful, you wouldn't be lost in the woods, all alone.
He rested his bow in the earth between them. Fresh blood stained one end of the wooden staff.
Are you sure you're not part of the convoy less than a league from here? The one with all the dead bodies?
He leaned even closer, dropping his voice to a whisper.
And no money?
He'd tracked her. Even with the care Mariko had taken to cover her trail, this man had managed to find her. This shiftless crow who fed on the scraps of his betters. Again, she chose to keep silent, secreting the Wakizashi completely behind her. Words would not serve her well with a man such as this.
Because if you are lost, he continued at his leisure, I'd consider it quite a fortunate omen for you. The Black Clan doesn't take prisoners, nor does it leave survivors. It's bad for business, you see. Both theirs and mine.
Understanding settled on Mariko, its grasp all too tight. As she'd suspected, he was not a member of the Black Clan. Even from the little she'd gathered earlier, the band of masked murderers was far more organized, far more precise. This man, with his filthy feet and soiled garments, was anything but. When Mariko failed to reply yet again, he furrowed his brow, agitation beginning to take root.
What if I delivered you to them?
He sidled closer, an arm's length away, dragging his bow haphazardly through the dark loam at his feet. It should have been threatening, but the man lacked the necessary focus, the necessary discipline of a true warrior.
I'm certain the Black Clan would appreciate me bringing you to them. I can't imagine they would want word of this failure to reach their employers or their competitors.
As she watched him lose footing on a root, Mariko couldn't suppress a soft jibe. Well, then, I'd be much obliged if you would lead me to them. It appears they've taken a few things of mine, and I would like them back. He rasped another laugh, and even with its lazy resonance, the sound chased down her spine.
You'd almost be amusing if you smiled more, his lips curled upward. In case your mother never told you, pretty girls like you should smile. Especially if you're trying to get a man to do your bidding.
Mariko stiffened. She hated his words, hated the suggestion she needed a man to do anything for her. Hated its truth.
Don't worry.
The man swung his bow slowly, directing her to walk before him.
We'll find the Black Clan. It might take some time, but I happen to know their favorite watering holes ring the western edge of the forest. They're bound to turn up there sooner or later. And I'm a patient man.
With a sly grin, he removed the coil of fraying rope dangling from his waistband. Mariko prepared to fight, easing her feet apart, bending slightly at the knees, anchoring herself to the earth.
Besides, his deepening smile caused her to shudder internally. You look like excellent company.
As he uncoiled the rope, Mariko readied her blade. Kenshin had taught her where to strike. Soft places unhampered by bone, like the stomach and the throat. If she could slash above the inside of his knee, his blood would spill fast enough to kill him in mere moments. Mariko calculated, considered. She was so busy in thought that she failed to anticipate his sudden movement. In an instant, the man had grabbed Mariko by the forearm, jerking her toward him. She shrieked, pushing back at him. The bow was knocked from his grasp, clattering against the base of a tree trunk. In the ensuing tumult, Mariko sought an angle to slash at his grip. She swung the wakizashi wide, not even caring to aim, hoping to strike anything at all. Callous laughter rolled from his lips as the man grappled for the wakizashi. His elbow caught the side of her face, bringing Mariko to the ground with no more effort than it took to subdue a mewling calf. One of her wrists in his filthy grip, the man attempted to bind her hands together. There was no time for fear or fury or emotion of any kind to steal upon her. Mariko screamed loudly, kicking at him and wrestling for control of the blade. Its tip sliced into her upper sleeve, cutting the fabric away from her body, revealing more skin. The man shoved Mariko's cheek into the dirt.
"It will do you no good to fight, girl," he said. "There is no reason for you to make this unpleasant for both of us."
"I am not a girl," the rage collected in her chest. "I am Hattori Mariko, and you will die for this by my hand. I swear it." He chuffed in amusement, his lower lip jutting smugly, saliva pooling in its center.
"The one marked for death is you. If the Black Clan wants you dead, you'll never make it through this forest alive."
Wiping his mouth on his shoulder, he paused, as if in deliberation.
"But I might be willing to consider other options."
His eyes stopped on the swath of naked skin above her elbow. The look she found on his face made Mariko want to tear out his throat with nothing but her teeth.
"I do not make deals with thieves."
"We're all thieves, girl. Your kind most of all."
He placed the blade of the wakizashi beneath her chin.
"Make your decision. Barter with me, and I'll return you to your family in one piece. For the right price, of course."
His foul stench washed over her.
"Or wait to barter with the Black Clan. But if I had a preference, I would choose me. I'm much nicer, and I won't hurt you."
In the lie, she heard the truth. Saw it, buried deep in his gaze.
"I will not be bandied about by men any longer. I am not a prize to be bought or sold."
Mariko let the desire to fight ease out of her, as though she was contemplating. Capitulating, the wakizashi dropped from beneath her chin just as her palms fell to her sides. Without a second thought, she threw a handful of dirt in the man's eyes. He flailed, his fingers swiping at clumps of earth, his soft underbelly exposed. Mariko promptly punched him at the base of his throat, then rolled away as he coughed and gagged, struggling to catch breath. Mariko tried to stand, tried to run, but her thin white robe was tangled around his legs. She fell atop him, and he made a blind grab for her. Without thought, Mariko snatched the tortoiseshell bar from her hair and stabbed it through his left eye. The ornament pierced through its center, a needle through a grape. His scream was slow, tortured. With its sound came a sudden rush of clarity. It blossomed in Mariko's chest, spreading like a swallow of perfectly brewed tea. Simple, instinctual. She took hold of the wakizashi and slashed the man's throat from ear to ear. His scream was swallowed by gurgles. Crimson bubbles sloshed past his lips as he tried to form his final words. After a few moments, he fell silent, motionless, save for the blood dripping from his eye and throat. Mariko crawled away, heaving the contents of her stomach into the underbrush. Hattori Mariko crouched against the rough trunk of an ancient pine tree. Her body rocked slowly in place. She watched her white tubby socks dampen in the misted moss. The brambles around her had become a refuge, the lichen at her sides a cloak. Soughing pines swayed above her head. Their echoing moans brought to mind the disquiet of lost souls, the many lost souls that had met their doom in the shadow of Jukai Forest. Less than a stone's throw from her lay one of these lost souls.
"Thank the stars I am not among them. Not yet, anyway."
Mariko wrapped her arms about her legs, as though she could hold herself together. The forest may not yet have claimed her for its own, but it was clear she was horribly lost, beyond all comprehension. In a wooden maze filled with creatures, both human and inhuman, that could kill her with only the wish to do so. The darkness that had recently become her refuge would also likely bring about her ruin. Its pressing menace reminded her of the time 10 years past, when Kenshin had challenged her to dive with him beneath the surface of the lake at the edge of their family's land.
It had been the afternoon following a summer storm. The water was a muddy color, the silt at its floor a constant swirl. Though she typically eschewed such mindless challenges, Mariko had always been an excellent swimmer, and Kenshin had been particularly self-important that day, had been especially in need of a lesson. So she dived for the bottom, her hands spreading through the murky water with assertive strokes. As she'd clawed toward her goal, a branch of twisted leaves had brushed her cheek, disorienting her. In that instant, she'd lost her bearings. Mariko could no longer tell which way to swim, could no longer make out a path in either direction. She'd taken in mouthful after mouthful of water as the terror had frayed away her confidence, had rubbed its edges raw until it all but fell apart. Were it not for the pull of Kenshin's steady hands, Mariko could have perished that day. It felt like that here. In this darkness thick with threat. In this forest, harboring in its folds the nightmares of millennia. A hooting owl broke through the quiet as it swooped lower, as it prowled for its evening meal. Glancing to her left, Mariko caught sight of a spider web in a bend of branches nearby. Dewdrops clung to its silken strands. She focused on the way they welled, collected, slid down and across the twinkling silk to pool at its center. Before she could blink an eye, the water splashed from the web in a cascade of diamonds. Its maker had returned, 8 long legs stretching across its surface, lying in wait for its prey. Mariko wanted to run from her skin, be anything, be anywhere but where she was. A brush of wind raked through the thorny brambles around her. Its breeze coiled beneath her hair, lifting the unbound strands. They caught in the stickiness on her cheeks, the salty wetness left there by trails of tears. She needed to find her way home, back to her family, back to where she supposedly belonged. But Mariko could not silence the thrum of her thoughts, could not squelch her curiosity. She wanted, no, needed, to find out why the Black Clan had been sent to kill her. Who wished her dead, and why? She inhaled carefully. Gripping her knees as they pressed into her chest, Mariko forced herself to stop swaying and start thinking. What would Kenshin do? The answer to that was simple. Her older brother would stop at nothing to learn who had tried to kill him, who had robbed his family and nearly brought an end to his life. Kenshin wouldn't rest until he brought the heads of his enemies home in sacks stained red with their blood. But her brother was allowed such discretion, such freedom to choose. After all, he had not earned the name the Dragon of Kai by remaining safe within the walls of their family's home. He'd earned it on the field of battle, with every swing of his sword. If Mariko returned home, her family would promptly dry her tears and send her back on her way. Back down this same path. Any word of the events that had transpired in Jukai Forest would be guarded to the death. If the emperor or the prince or any member of the nobility learned that Mariko had been attacked on her journey to Inako, the royal family might cancel their marriage arrangement, might claim this misfortune was a bad omen, one that could not be risked on royal blood. Never mind the cold question that would undoubtedly follow, the whispers that would trail at her back. The question of Mariko's virtue. Lost in the forest, alone with murderers and thieves. A question that would linger, despite her family's heartfelt protests. Mariko pressed her lips to one side. The same question she'd already answered in revenge. In an afternoon of calculated fury. But if she learned the truth, if she learned who was responsible for sending the Black Clan to murder her, Mariko might be able to spare her parents the embarrassment of having their daughter turned away, might spare them the risk of having their family name soiled under a cloud of suspicion. Her thoughts began to wind through her mind with the slow squeeze of a snake. What if someone in Inako had sent the Black Clan? What if a rival family in the nobility had arranged her death to ruin the Hattori family's rising fortune? If such a feat could occur, then anyone in the Imperial City could be called to question. If Mariko learned the truth behind tonight's events, then perhaps she could bring to light her family's detractors, proving herself useful to the Hattori name, beyond securing an advantageous marriage. Moreover, she would have a few days, perhaps even weeks, to spend roaming at her leisure. Then she would return and be the dutiful daughter evermore. Mariko swallowed. She could almost taste the air of freedom, its sweet promise, tantalizing the tip of her tongue. Again, a cool breeze cut through the air, twisting her hair in another frenzy. The light scent of camellia oil filled her nostrils, the oil used to tame her thick strands, to coil them into obedience, reminding her. Hattori Mariko could not roam the Empire of Wa at her leisure. A girl from a noble family could never attempt such a thing, not to mention the fact that Hattori Kenshin was among the best trackers in the Empire. As soon as her brother discovered Mariko had gone missing, he would begin his search without question. That was how it had always been. Though Kenshin was only a few moments older than Mariko, he had cared for her, watched out for her, since they were children. Her brother would find her. Of that there was no question. Exasperated, she swiped a white sleeve across her forehead. A streak of black powder rubbed onto the silk. The burned polonia wood that had been used to enhance her eyebrows. Mariko scrubbed at the stained sleeve, then gave up with a silent oath, her moment of happiness swallowed by the inevitable crush of truth. Her eyes fell on the bloodied wakizashi lying nearby. No longer caring about the loss of her fine underrobe, she wiped the blood on its hem, smeared it further. Blood and blackened polonia. It was true Hattori Mariko could not roam the Empire at her leisure, but if... Mariko removed the jade bar from the last ring of hair at her crown. The black tangles tumbled around her shoulders, unfurling to her waist in a fall of scented ebony. She gathered her hair in one hand near the nape of her neck. Later, she would marvel at how she did not hesitate, not even for an instant. Mariko sliced through the gathered strands in one blow. Then she stood. With only a passing glance of remorse, Mariko scattered her hair across the thorny brambles, careful to conceal the strands deep in the shadows. She felt lighter. Her shoulders eased back. Mariko glanced around with a new sight, as though her eyes could penetrate the heavy darkness, see through the thick veil of night. Her gaze locked on the motionless figure to her left, the twisted scavenger she had recently killed. Strange how she did not feel any pity, did not feel even a shred of remorse. Kenshin would have been proud. She'd fought off her assailant, and in doing so, she'd displayed one of the seven virtues of Bushido. Courage. The way of the warrior. Mariko knelt beside the pool of congealed blood. As with everything else, the man's garments were filthy. The collar of his hemp kosode was stained with rice wine and dried millet, and the linen of his trousers was threadbare. But they would serve one last purpose. Her thoughts unnervingly clear, Mariko untied the sash of her underrobe, let it drop from her shoulders to the ground. Then she reached to untie the knot of his kosode. Hattori Mariko was not just any girl. She was more. The Dragon of Kai. The massive warhorse stalked through the pre-dawn mist. A curtain of vines parted in its wake. Mounted samurai moved from the darkness, resuming their formation at the beast's flank. Its heavily armored rider led them inexorably forward. The horse huffed through its nostrils, its eyes wild as its breath mingled with the mist, two steady streams of barely checked rage. The samurai atop the sorrel horse was a stark contrast to his mount. He appeared calm, collected,